Why isn't agriculture, why can't we make agriculture stay on this instead of pushing some more just industry?
I want you to know that one of the major issues we've been attempting to address is that I don't disagree with you, by the way, that in fact agriculture is a tremendous economic asset to Oregon, particularly in the Willamette Valley, where you have vegetables and fruits. But you explain to me, and what we're trying to find out, why are all the canneries leaving Oregon? Why are they leaving the Northwest? Why are they locating in Michigan? And we have this tremendous resource, the raw material, that the canneries are leaving. Now, the truth is, no one knows, because no one sat down and analyzed why. But I'm telling you, in my opinion, we're losing a valuable economic asset to the state if we allow that to continue. And we have to look at that. And I think that if, in fact, that you analyze and find out what the problem is, I think maybe we can start making some decisions to try to keep them here, because that is an industry, in my opinion, that benefits the state considerably and economically, and I think it's an industry that's compatible with the resources that we do have. That's our ability to grow food. Yeah.
As you spoke of the need for additional hatcheries and things in Oregon, concerns for our fish from the industry, I'm worried if more emphasis should be placed on just the habitat preservation in general, realizing, of course, that all the hatcheries in the world are going to make it, we don't have the spawning grounds.
Again, long-term environmental decisions, short-term economic decisions. We're just starting to understand the impact of dams on the Columbia River Basin and the fish runs up there. We now know that. We're now starting to understand that, in fact, that the reason why you had a buffer strip along streams and logging operations weren't solely aesthetic. It was the fact that when you cut all the trees down, the sun hits the water, it raises the water temperature, and the fish can't spawn. It's the fact when you put a highway in, and in fact, when you build it, you build a road, and then you put a culvert in the road up from a stream, and the culvert's 10 feet higher than the creek, that the fish can't get through. It's the fact that now we know that, in fact, that when there's a windstorm or something, and or a logging practice that basically blocks a stream, and you just turn your back and walk away from it and say, well, listen, it'll wash out during the next great flood that comes down here to clean it all out like splash dams used to. What you're going to lose are probably a year or two or three or however long it takes again to build another flood, a flood to come down, clean it out. And we have to make a commitment to that. So I do agree that the things that the state has to do is, one, I do believe in the STEP program. I think it's got to be enhanced. I think that stream rehabilitation and spawning ground rehabilitation are critical elements in that. I do support the moratorium on aquaculture. I want you to know that the seven licenses that are left, I have serious reservations economically and environmentally, genetic-wise, in that regard, as what we're going to do with aquaculture. But I want to see and I want to look at it. Now, I think that the state does have a moratorium on the licensing, and I think we should look at it. I am concerned more on a policy of the transfer of public eggs into the private hatcheries. No one's explained to me yet why the OPI index, in its index, doesn't include the aquaculture fish that are dropped into the eggs that are dropped, but yet when the people catch the fish, that they're included in that quota. It seems to me you're counting them at the back end but not at the front end. I don't understand that. And those are the type of things that I think we have to look at. In the long run, to rehabilitate the fish runs of the state. I also believe that the Northwest Power Bill and its attempt to replenish the Columbia River tributaries to the, I think it's the pre-1953 level, is a good move. If you ask me whether it's going to increase utility rates, the answer is yes. There's no doubt that it will. But I would suggest to you, again, that's another long-term economic benefit to this state to, in fact, have those fish runs rehabilitated. The other things, I think that, and I would hope that the Planning Council doesn't view their role in the fishery resources with the Northwest Power Bill as merely developing a plan. I hope their involvement is a long, ongoing one that goes beyond just developing a plan and saying there it is, but I mean actually seeing that it's implemented and monitoring and seeing the direction that we're going to go. I do believe that the fishery resources are a tremendous asset to the state. I was up in St. Helens and I saw a hatch box that somebody had put up, and I sat there, and I know in Junction City, and all the kids and my kids are in 4-H, and they do things like goats and chickens and everything. And I can't understand why the kids on the coast don't basically get a 4-H program or something like that to do something with the
there
hatch
are.
Boxes.
There
is one.
There's one anyway.
And you know, in a major effort to get the and do it in stream rehabilitation on the coast. You know, and things like that. Those are the projects that I think that you can move to, and I think it will make a movement. The fact is that there are many, many more users in the term of number of people who utilize the fish resources in the state. And I don't think that there ever is going to be enough in the sense that everybody can have everything they want. And there's always going to be a season, and there's always going to be a quota. What I think we have to do, in my opinion, is to treat everyone fairly. I think that that's what government policy is supposed to do. But in the long run, I think you have to preserve the resource itself, and it's particularly the native ones. And I do not want this state to go to a position like they did in Japan, where they just basically abandoned the native runs and gone completely to aquaculture, and has decided that that's the way to handle it. I think that'd be bad.
Kind of on the same issue, I've observed a few cases where it seems like the state government is never not really standing up to situations where the federal government is taking actions that ultimately led to destruction of fish habitat, namely on the coast here of this last winter, there was a below Cape Perpetua, South Piajas, where previously the headwalls had been logged on a streams of Wind Creek specifically, and this whole thing washed out. You see trees 60 feet up with branches broke off, and also across Highway 101. Not only destroying the Adams fish habitat either, but also greatly impacting the state and the state park. And yet, as far as I know, the state was just totally quiet. There were no remarks made about it. It seems like it's been very appropriate for the state to say something to the federal government and say, look, you've created a situation that's impacted lands, and hold the federal government in some way accountable, at least have some assurances that this is going to occur in the future.
No, I don't disagree with that. That isn't a difficult one for me to say that, in fact, if I know about that as the governor, I will make our position known very well. But let me suggest that, you know, some of the problems, you know, in implementing and enforcing, I should say, the Forest Practices Act of the state, you know, the typical thing, you know who gets those jobs? It's just like timber crews. And when I found out in dealing with the Department of Forestry and determining timber crews, you know who gets those jobs? The guy that's just out of school, got no experience, and they're the ones that they give and may go out and enforce the Forest Practices Act. He's got a little citation book. And you know, it's really difficult. This guy is wanting to get ahead and make a job, and he's out there on the landing with these loggers and these choker setters out there, and they're all sitting there. And I can tell you what happens. He gets intimidated very quickly, and they overlook a lot of things. And those are the type of things that I can assure you that aren't insidious. No one is out to do that intentionally. It's a simple fact of the way the system's designed. And I can assure you that Mr. Miller and I are going to have a series of talks after November 2nd about some of the concerns that I have in that area.
When you're talking to Mr. Miller, there might be another thing you might bring up, and that is that when they go in and we clear cut log these areas, I never hear anyone mention the impact of wind damage in areas where there has never been any wind damage before. In my own case, for instance, 2 years in a row now, I've suffered major wind damage because the Siuslaw National Forest logged off a big logging area, and all the slopes around me are logged up. So that whether it's an east wind or a west wind,
it comes down.
I'm just in there in that area, and the wind just comes whirling in there, and all the trees on my place are blowing down. They're blowing off the roadside banks, in the November 13th storm, I had three trees in my little creek at one time. And it's just horrendous the amount of wind damage that is caused when we so drastically change our land contours.
That brings up the second time now, a general question of the relationship between the federal government and Oregon. How does the governor of David, Oregon, deal with the federal alliance?
You know, one of the things that I I thought you were going to tell me, Steve, it's just like, what's that old statement, something out by the bear in the woods, and it's any place he wants to. First of all, that whether you agree with James Watt or not, there are certain things that I think that they're doing. It's the same way with whether you agree with the federalism or not. Some form of it is going to come back to the state. I believe, in my opinion, the state of Oregon should be an equal partner with the federal government in the management of those federal lands that are located in the state. I do not support the Sagebrush Rebellion that returns the ownership to the state, but I do support the idea of a joint management effort with the state and the federal government on those lands. Obviously, that is something that I believe will come about in time. I think that whether it's Watt or somebody else, that they will start doing that. To what magnitude, I don't know. I guess what I'm trying to say is that I don't know if it ever be an equal partner. I do think that the state is going to be listened to much more in that regard. I think a lot of it depends upon the governor themselves and how strong of a personality and how strong that you're willing to go back and fight for those type of things. My belief, again, is that the governor does lead the Oregon congressional delegation. It's obvious that leading the United States Senate is awful difficult. They basically have a mind of their own, and they're going to do what they want. But I don't think that they're wanting to publicly pick a fight with the governor of the state, as long as it's a rational and a fair policy for Oregon. And I think that basically, again, what has to happen is that you have to be able to sit down with the congressional delegation, with the federal government, and explain our position as to why. Can I tell you a story that just brought this up to me? I was back in Washington, D.C. about a month and a half ago, and I went back to testify on an unemployment compensation concept that they had. And as I left Oregon, I got a call from the head of the Employment Division. It says, listen, there's this bill in Congress, and it's to extend unemployment benefits for 10 weeks. And it's in Congress, and I said, would you go back there and just see and just check on where it's at? So I was back there, and one of the people that I had an appointment with was Ted Kennedy. And he came in, and he sat down, and he says, how are you doing? And I've known him for a number of years now. And he said, how are you doing? I says, well, I said, where you been? He said, well, we've had this meeting in the Senate Labor Committee. And he's the ranking minority member on the Senate Labor Committee. And I said, what was it? He says, it's an unemployment bill. And I said, well, which one is it? And he starts describing, and I says, listen, that's the bill that I'm supposed to talk to somebody about. So he called up and brought one of his staff people in, and they showed the list of states who were going to be coming to the bill. And I looked at it, and Oregon wasn't even in it. And I said, listen, I said, you know, that's what I think that we're trying to do, is to get and it was a definitional change that needed to come about to put that in. And we sat there, Kennedy had a staff member, and the guy told me what I thought, what I had to do, and we did it, and Oregon got within the statute. And I guess the point I'm bringing out, what it is just your willingness to go say, listen, we got a problem, and here's what we'd like you to look at. And I think that you'll find out that a lot of times it's a lack of understanding that there's something you can do. And a lot of people a lot of times take the position, well, you can't do anything about it. I don't believe that. It's just generally not my nature, and Steve Schell tells you, even when I'm wrong, I generally believe that there's nothing I can do. Steve and I have fought over a couple of issues in the legislature on the other side, and he always beats me. He always prevails. Two. But I've got him counted, Steve. The fact is that good memories are what keep the fact is that if you make the effort to understand it and deal with people and allow people like yourselves to come in and participate, you shine a lot more light on the decisions the government makes. You point out a lot of the problems that we have, and you give us a lot of different directions. If there's anything that I think this state needs now more than anything, it needs creativity, it needs ingenuity, and these new ideas, and anybody that tells me that it can't be done that way because this is the way we've always done it, I'm going to tell you, don't tell me that, because I just don't believe that. I believe that, in fact, that you look and you always be receptive to new ideas. You may reject them, because it may be the way we're doing it may be the best way, but you can't be afraid of new ideas. And what I can tell you with the federal government and dealing with them, I'm going to deal with them as this partnership relationship, and they will listen to me as if I believe that I was a partner. Now, I'm not kidding you at all to think that I'm going to go down there and they're going to sit there and say, you're right, Ted, let's go do it your way. But they're going to listen to me. And I think that by bringing a number of other forces involved in the congressional delegation, I think we can't have that anymore. It's just a willingness to do it.
You got to be like a turtle. If your neck isn't out, you're not going anywhere. That's been our problem for the last several years. Our neck hasn't been out. We've been a custodial government. And by God, you can't be a custodial government while everything's changing around you. You just can't do it.
That's exactly what the problem is. It's a changing economy. It's a changing society. It's a changing world. And you have to have a government that is basically responsive to those changes. It's always looking. And basically understanding the bottom line is always the public interest. And it's not just a short term. You know, politicians have a tremendous problem in making long-term decisions. Because long-term to us is our political tenure. If I got a four-year term, it's a political four-year problem, and I'll look at it after that. But you have to start looking further than that. And that's why I said in the very beginning, and I'll close with this, is that the economic decisions of the state and economic development have to be looked beyond the fact whether I think it's good political rhetoric to do something what I want to do politically, that I'm for economic development, because the bottom line success of it, you know, the title of governor is something you get on November the 2nd. Whether in fact that you're a good governor for the state, time tells that. And not just 4 years or 8 years, it's passing the time. And the fact is you have to make those decisions for 20 years down the road. But people may say wasn't too hot at the time we talked about it, but it was obviously the right decision. And I have to tell you, the phenomenon of Tom McCall is the fact that he basically was able to do a lot of that in his own lifetime. And that is the rarity of his process. He made those decisions, and though they weren't popular at the time, and people were arguing this, and he went ahead and did them, and we've seen 10 years after he left, he was right. You know, and that's his strength, and those are the type of decisions you can make. What makes them so difficult today, it was popular when Tom made them. I've got to make them now when people are really, they're really perplexed. There's a great deal of dissatisfaction among the constituency, and they want to have a belief that there's hope. And what I leave you with is the fact that I think we've all been told what's wrong with Oregon, what's wrong with us. I think that now it's time to start understanding what we can do, the strengths we have. It's our people. It's our natural resources. It's the pride the people of the state have in themselves, in their environment. The quality of life is one of the strongest assets that this state has. And if in fact if we lose that, I think we will probably lose one of the major bargaining chips in attracting business to this state. So what I promise you is a governor who not only brings you into the process in the election to get you to help me get elected, but a governor who's going to be with you in a forum like this after November is when we develop that strategic policy to find where we want to be at the turn of this next century. Thank you very much.